a specific survey here and Drake it. They were actually at the same time looking to pilot a new version of the assessment that was briefer. A lot of times students will look at a five-page, 200-question survey and sort of check A, B, C, D, A.
Yeah.
So this briefer survey would hopefully be able to get more realistic results from students. The timing was right for us to partner with that organization to do a survey of both the middle and the high school.
Correct. Now, is this similar to what they talked about doing in the opioid bill that was just passed?
Yeah, to some degree, but that'll be more focused specifically
just on the
opioids.
Drugs, right.
I mean, there are a handful of questions about drugs themselves, but I'm not sure what format they would look
so
at.
So this survey was not prepared by your staff. It was brought in from the state.
It's created by a group at UMass Boston. It is statistically validated. It is they hand us the surveys. We pass them out, collect them, and they do all of the data.
Now, is there any preparation done for the? I mean, so I looked at some of the questions and I went, I don't know. I mean, what would they be thinking about when they answered the question? So, is there a walkthrough where some level of expectation is given? So, this is what we mean. This is what we're trying to get at here. So this is how you ought to be thinking about the question. Anything at all, or just here's the question answered?
I think there's a brief conversation. There was a letter that went home because we have to give parents the opportunity to opt out if they chose.
Yeah.
Only a small handful of families opted to do that. But there was a brief conversation to provide context. But beyond that, you really want to almost get a cold look at the
fresh,
assessment
cold look,
and have
yeah.
the students just react to what they're reading.
Well, the reason that I asked is that some of the questions are, for a young person, seriously considering suicide, is what does that mean? I mean, those kinds of things.
That's interesting, but the comparison between seriously considering and have actually tried mm-hmm. is what I was looking at, and that sort of scared me.
It does. Yeah. The discomfort with the questions, and when we went through and looked at them, we had the same kinds of concerns and questions about the questions. But the reality is these are things that students are talking about. This is open conversation in most places. We're trying to be honest and have those upfront conversations. So the only way to do that is to actually just upfront say.
So it's just totally organic. Yeah. We're not going to review the context of this thing. We're just going to throw it at you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is good. Now, before we actually get into the numbers or anything, how did they choose who actually took the survey?
We did it two different ways for scheduling logistical reasons. At the middle school, we were able to survey virtually all of the students.
That's what it looked like when I saw the numbers.
At the high school, because of the schedules and where the high school operates, we were given the option of doing about 200, and I think we had 178 or some number that took the survey. Those were distributed evenly by grade and by across classrooms. So we had a good random sample.
So it was a random survey. It wasn't self-selected kids volunteering to take it.
No, and it was about 18%. It has been validated by UMass as being statistically relevant. And frankly, if you compare the results of this survey with the last published one from the state in 2013, the numbers are sort of dead spot on. And that helped validate that the information we got was correct.
Right, but it also shows that Drake is having the same problems as everyone else.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, that's the important thing. So have the results been compared against other results in other other disciplines, other areas?
We looked at the last published data from the Department of Education and the Department of Public Health, and we looked at a variety of other school systems who have undertaken this kind of survey before.
So are there any stark differences here?
No. The numbers were, within a few tenths of a point, they're dead on with everyone else.
Yeah. So do you have any specifics you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think the survey was broken into two major areas. One was mental health related, and one was on illicit drug and alcohol use.
Right.
And I can go through them, and we can talk about
them
in detail.
Go through some of them, yeah.
Children were asked about their if they've undertaken any self-injurious behavior, if they've cut themselves, if they've hurt themselves.
And I was seeing numbers there of 10%.
They're actually higher than that. The middle school, 14.4% of the students reported that they've had at least one attempt at self-injurious behavior.
At that age.
At that age. And at the high school, it was 10.7%. In terms of depressive behaviors, have you felt sad or helpless for about 2 weeks over any time in the last 2 weeks over the last year? 18% of the students at the middle school said they had, and 19.6% of the students at the high school said they
had. Now, I wonder on that, because most teenagers do go through depressive stages.
There is. And if you look at the numbers, again, they're it's consistent with other adolescents.
Right.
And we're not comparing adolescents to adults. So we know at the high, at the middle and high school grades, you're going to have these kinds of behaviors. What stands out to us, but again, not uncommon, is 25% of the girls at the middle school and 27% of the girls at the high school have reported these depressive behaviors. Again, consistent with what mental health professionals would tell you, but it's still a disturbing number to really hear about our children.
What's the connection between self injure self on purpose and seriously considering suicide? Is there a difference in the results of the answer to that question?
A process of someone who positions. So in part, I would want to defer to them. But there's a trajectory and there's a thought process of someone who.
Right, but I mean, that statistically, were the results similar, or were there more people who, you know, somebody trying to injure themselves on purpose might be crying out for attention, whereas considering suicide is a whole different matter. Results reflect that or not?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at the next question was, have you seriously considered suicide? So it's on this spectrum of self-injurious behavior, attention-seeking behavior. Seriously considered suicide, 9.5% of the students at the middle school and 9.3% of the students at the high school have seriously considered suicide.
I would like to have a social worker come to talk about that someday, because the self mutilating thing.
That's consistent across the
board. It usually doesn't tie into a suicide thing. It's really a way of self-medicating. By giving yourself pain, it makes you forget other things. So that they're definitely different issues and different symptoms.
And you also throw into their attention-seeking behaviors. I mean, there's a series of things that go into those kinds of behaviors with children. The good news, if there's good news, is that and it's not good news, but children who have attempted suicide and the students seriously considered it, and the ones who have attempted it's a much lower number. Again,
it's
consistent.
Like 1% to 10%.
Yeah. If 10% of the students had considered it, 1.5% and 1.3% respectively at the two schools had attempted suicide. Again, very sad, very troubling, but consistent with the numbers you find in other adolescent groups.
But it does stand out in your head saying out of the sample we took, 2% did try, not just consider, which means, you know, if you got 1,300 kids in your high school, you're talking about a significant number of kids.
But that's the interesting thing there. I agree with you, but the interesting thing there is that is consistent with results from other school
districts. From other towns, yes.
So that's kind of one of those things that young people go through on their way to, but I don't know the results would be any different for adults, right? I mean,
I don't know the adult rate at this point.
I bet it's 1% anyway.
I think the thing that I would like to draw a difference of, while the numbers are consistent, our ability to address the issues is different here than it
That's
is in other communities.
That's where I was going to go eventually.
You know, if you do the math, somewhere between 11 and 14 students at the middle school level have attempted suicide, and about 10 to 12 at the high school. Do we have the ability to get to those students proactively and try to support them in any way possible?
If a teacher sees something's coming, do they have someone to go to? Do they have the resources and services available?
Well, do they not?
You know,
I mean, let's just take it to that question. So let's say you have somebody that's talking about that somehow some staff member becomes aware that you have a student that has considered suicide. Where do you go with that?
The normal course would be, and it's rarer for a teacher to be told that level of personal information. But all the adults in the school, we provide training on identification of suicidal kind of behaviors, depressive behaviors, and the idea is to refer them to a mental health professional in the school.
Right.
And then if that's not available, we refer to a private organization or a nonprofit outside the schools. That becomes increasingly difficult as supports around the teachers is less and less. And that's, I think, the difference here in Drake as opposed to other communities, that the capacity for us to be able to provide that support in-house is much more difficult.
All right. Where are we going from here? We went through some categories, right?
Yeah. Are there any... Furthers, the drinking one is the one we really should talk about.
Yeah, we can.
Some of those numbers, in terms of the ages the kids are starting, and they're even binge drinking at junior high levels.
What's interesting is they asked two sets of questions. One was about perception, what the students perceived their peers doing, and then what the students were actually doing.
Right.
So for alcohol, the 29% of the students at the middle school reported that they believed their peers were drinking alcohol, when in reality the number was 16.1%. Still really high.
Well, maybe they were misled. I mean, their kids talk about drinking that never drank.
Absolutely.
That's exactly it.
And then the use of marijuana. marijuana. Students at the middle school said that 43% of their peers were smoking marijuana, and at the high school it was 80%. In reality, marijuana use was 5% at the middle school and 35% at the high school. So the perceptions are much different than the realities that we have.
Do you present the survey back to the students?
The two principals at the middle high school are creating groups of students, so we're going to have a group of students sit down and talk about it, in part so that they can become part of the conversation, but in part that we can learn from what we hear from them and try to again, move our services to support.
Be interesting to present those numbers showing, you know, your perception is much different than reality, and get that word out to the kids to change their perception.
Absolutely. And I think that comes from education, that comes from being engaged in conversation, which was the whole effort here to undertake these surveys.
Right. Will there be any management decisions made based on the results of the survey? Are you looking forward and said, we need to go in this direction?
Well, I think the one thing that I've said consistently now for the fourth year as superintendent is that we need to provide more mental health supports to students. This goes sort of to the override question, that the first staffing that we would draw in off of a successful override would be mental health supports. And we can talk about why that's important. And I know there are people who say we should be providing classroom teachers. But unanimously, the administration believes that that's the best way to address the supports. Because
so how would you address it? What does it look like? The override passes? Where do you go?
The override, see, we've created a creative solution to the override, that we need to bring in technology because we have mandates coming from the state about testing. We would use the bulk of the override money, all of it, in the first year for technology upgrades. That triggers a $200,000 rebate from the federal government for the installation of wireless technology. We would then use that rebate in our operating budget to bring in staff. And we're looking at three staff in the first year.
So would they be
mental health adjustment counselors that would support the teachers in the classroom?
These are counselors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but they're not. This is not Bob Newhart psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
This is really triage, talking to the student, going for a walk with a student who's having difficulty, and then getting them back in the classroom and attending to work. Mm. So that both supports that student, and it stops the disruptions that those students may be causing, allowing everyone to focus back
this
on
this is the plus. If you tie it all together, that you now have a phone in the classroom, a teacher can pick up and call someone saying, I'm having some trouble, the student needs some help, can you send someone down? And we actually have someone we can send down.
If I can provide another visual. If you think about it, if you used to watch Welcome Back, Carter, who was the person who intervened? That was a vice principal, and that vice principal would usually apply discipline, which is needed in a lot of cases. But I would say that we've really moved in education, that if you can provide someone who has training in communicating, listening to students and reflective conversations with them, to move them off of their difficulty and then get them back attending faster than just having someone sit outside the principal's office, you're doing a better job with that student.
How do you model the investment in counselors? Is it a district-wide thing? Is it focused on a certain group of classes? Is it focused on middle school, or is it focused on the whole district?
It would be across the district. These behaviors that are being reflected in the survey, these are students who have already gone through elementary school. If we can target those students earlier, we can hopefully take them off a trajectory of self-injurious behavior or negative attention-seeking behavior. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we have right now a 1,200-to-1 ratio between students and mental health counselors in our district.
So if you have a group of students, the interesting thing, and I can certainly appreciate the counselor involvement, may not be a matter of stopping a student from getting to that level, because that may be sort of organic, but the question is, where do they go from that point, and how do you help them grow out of that? What can counselors do to change that thought process on the part of young people to do that?
Well, I think it's two levels. One, there's the basic interpersonal communication that they're specifically trained to provide to hopefully move them off of one behavior onto a more positive behavior or action. But again, these are not, we're not doing psychoanalysis in the school. Right. So if a student really has more intense needs, then those counselors are providing supports or providing referrals outside to someone who would do more in-depth therapy. Mm. We're not having students laying on couches and having this Freudian psychoanalysis. We're doing really triage crisis intervention, but then referring, and then follow-up, and then coordination between an outside provider and a family and or a student inside the school.
All right, so that's an important thing for people to understand when they look at the override question, at least as it relates to the schools, is that that's how some of the resources get applied. And I, by the way, the whole idea of investing in the technology that generates the rebate is really an effective use of resources. So that's an easy sell. That's a good job. But the next step is, so these are not going to be, you're not looking at hiring teachers, you're hiring counselors at this next stage.
I think initially through the override dollars and looking at the first three years of the implication of an override, putting some counselors in place in year one, in year two maybe another counselor, and then a couple of additional teachers as we are able to then leverage the dollars moving forward. And we have to look at the operating budget itself to see how that could support our efforts moving forward.
Saturday Morning Live at 980 WCAP. Warrenshaw here with Sean Ash. We are talking to Draycott Superintendent of Schools, Steve Stone, talking about some of the issues. It was very interesting. And if you get a chance, Sean's got it online. I'm sure that it's elsewhere, too. Take a look at the survey. But the good news is that the superintendent in the school district didn't find anything. They didn't find an outlier there that makes us inconsistent with what they're hearing elsewhere from young people. And I think, to me, that may be the best news of all, that there's not some kind of a problem acute to this community. So,
and I guess I want to make the point, and I tried to say it online as well, is the samples are small numbers, so you can't really look at the race numbers and make a generalization about that race. It's really unfair because they'll say, 50% of them were binge drinking. I'm saying, well, if there were only two chosen in that race, it's an unfair description. And statistically, I think you could say the same thing, right?
Absolutely, and especially when you get down to, and then one set of numbers we didn't talk about was the heavy drug use and what the numbers were at the schools.
Right.
I'm certainly happy to talk about that if you want. When you talk about alcohol and marijuana, much higher than anyone wants. When you get to the heavy duty drugs, inhalant use about 1.8% at the middle school, 2% at the high school. Heroin use was 0.7% at the middle, 0.7% at the high school. Cocaine was 0.4 and 1.4, respectively. Illicit pain medication use was 1.3 and 2.8. And then the last category was other illegal drugs, and that could be Ritalin, Valium, Xanax, steroids, etc. 1.3 at the middle and 4.2 at the high school.
So, 4.2, wow.
But that's also a large category, so again, you have to be careful about what that means. So we've talked about how we can maybe get at those pieces of information, but that's a little further down the line. Hmm.